Everybody, Rob Maurer here, and we've got an action-packed episode today. We have news on the Cybertruck, more price changes from Tesla, news on the Supercharger network possibly opening it up to other electric vehicles. We've got an update on the Tesla Semi. Edmunds has published an update on their electric vehicle range test after a complaint from Tesla, and then a couple other stories as well, including one really interesting thing to end today. First, a quick look at the stock. Tesla today finished up 1.6% to $640.39. That compared to the NASDAQ, which at the end of the day turned green, up 0.1%. All right, first up here, we've got a little bit of an update on the Cybertruck. It's been a while since we've heard anything there. Somebody on Twitter was asking Elon Musk if he could give us a little bit of a teaser. Elon replied to that saying, quote, "There will be no handles," end quote. If we remember back to the Cybertruck unveiling, it did have handles at that point in time, very similar to the styling of the Model S door handles, that pop-in, pop-out style. K10 and Tesla owners East Bay shared a couple of photos and a video of that door handle in action on Twitter. And that's definitely something I would consider a door handle, so looks like a design update here. What we may see is something similar to the Roadster's door opening system if we go back to that unveiling. Tesla's got a sensor there in the B-pillar that you just swipe down on, and that pops the door open. The B-pillar on the Cybertruck looks like it'd be pretty similar, so Tesla could probably house similar equipment there, and it looks like there's also similar space available on the C-pillar for the rear doors for a similar system. So I do think that is probably the most likely. Of course, there are other options. I guess they could do some sort of button, and that wouldn't technically be a door handle either. That's how the Model X works. But I think by removing the door handle, they're going for easier manufacturing, so I'm not sure that adding a button would fully achieve that goal. Hopefully it won't be too long until we know. Back at the beginning of March, Elon said they would probably provide an update on the Cybertruck in Q2. All right, next up here, we're talking about Tesla's price changes. We again have price changes. This is the fourth time in the US this quarter. This time it's on the Model 3 Standard Range Plus and the Long Range All-Wheel Drive vehicles. Tesla's increased the price on both of these by $500. So we're now back to where Tesla started the quarter for both, and then the Performance Model 3 is $1,000 more than when we started the quarter. No price change this time on the Model Y, but same situation there, where the Performance is $1,000 more than the beginning of the quarter, and the all-wheel drive the same price. While Tesla changing around prices, obviously not all that unusual since we've seen four this quarter, it is unusual to see it at the end of the quarter. Usually what we're seeing from Tesla at this point in time is some offers of free supercharging. Maybe sometimes they'll throw in a couple other perks, maybe free paint upgrades, wheel upgrades, things of that nature. And while the quarter's not over yet, we may see some of those things next week. To my knowledge, we haven't seen any of that action yet. As always, that could be taken a couple different ways. That could mean Tesla was production constrained and just couldn't make enough vehicles this quarter to have to do any of those things. Or it could mean that deliveries are strong enough in every locality where Tesla has shipped cars, because remember, demand is not this fixed concept. It varies by individual locations and where Tesla has shipped cars in anticipation of demand and all of these things. Or it could just mean that Tesla doesn't particularly care too much if some of the vehicles that are supposed to be delivered this quarter end up slipping into Q2. Remember, the customer has to be available and accept delivery. Tesla can't just, like, leave it in the driveway or something. That's often why we see those small end-of-quarter incentives, just so Tesla can make sure that customers aren't delaying due to a very mild inconvenience or something like that. Obviously, that's much more important in a quarter like Q4, where you're getting your annual number, versus a quarter like Q1, where really it's inconsequential other than showing a slightly better number on the quarterly report. If Tesla doesn't care too much about that, it's likely a sign of, number one, they're convinced that they're going to be profitable by a fair amount, and they're happy with how the number would compare either year over year or quarter over quarter. So last year in Q1, Tesla only delivered about 88,000 vehicles. That was partially impacted by the pandemic. Tesla's obviously going to crush that number this year. And then in Q4, Tesla delivered about 181,000 vehicles. Seems like most expect the number to fall below that this quarter. So I don't think there's too much we can read into that. Tesla could have decided that they're not going to achieve that anyway. Or, obviously, the more bullish take, that Tesla's confident they'll achieve a higher number than that either way. I'll be going through my delivery and, most importantly, production forecasts next week. Alright, next here we've got a Twitter rumor related to the Supercharger network. This is coming from someone by the name of Bill Wright, obviously likely a pseudonym, but he has shared some interesting leaks out of Tesla before, so I think he's got pretty decent credibility, but as always, grain of salt. Anyway, he had a series of tweets here saying, adapter plus app equals question mark. Somebody guessed supercharger adapter for another EV, and he said, quote, "This guy here gets a gold star," end quote. Separately adding a little bit more detail, saying that it's neither but also both for legacy or startup EVs, reiterating that it's an adapter and an app, and that these other EVs would potentially, quote, "establish an account with Tesla and make payment directly. No middleman, no monkey business, no shenanigans, nothing funny here. It's all on the up and up," end quote. He also adds, quote, "no other EV company, no other OEM, Tesla and the customer, end of story," end quote. So, potentially huge news here. This would mean Tesla could be potentially opening up the supercharger network to all other electric vehicles. though I'm sure there would be some sort of minimum threshold for charging performance that these EVs would have to meet, and this would be quite a change in the model. I'm sure Tesla customers aren't thrilled at that proposition. Obviously, it adds more electric vehicles potentially taking up charging spots. And while I don't think congestion has been a huge issue for most Tesla owners, it definitely hasn't universally been a non-issue. So this could be disappointing for some customers. So that's the most obvious downside from a customer perspective. And from an investor perspective, the biggest downside would seem to be that this would take away one of Tesla's biggest competitive advantages, the supercharger network. We'll talk a bit more about that in a second, but as for benefits, there are definitely quite a few here, the biggest of which I think goes right back to Tesla's mission statement of accelerating the advent of sustainable energy. A move like this would certainly seem to help the push for electrification. It makes things a lot easier for startups, and for legacy automakers, they seem to just be sitting around waiting for someone else to do it anyway, and Tesla has already done it. The other major benefit is that Tesla is better able to leverage a very valuable asset that they have in the supercharging network. A lot of that value is derived from the number of locations rather than the sheer capacity. For example, allowing other EVs on the network probably isn't going to cause any capacity issues at superchargers in Montana, for example, but having that coverage and that utility available for the entire electric vehicle fleet adds a ton of value to each EV. As for the economics, Tesla's got a ton of options here. I think we can explore that deeper in a future episode. But Tesla should be able to generate a pretty significant amount of revenue at a pretty decent margin, I think. Maybe there's a one-time fee to join the network of $500 or $1,000 or something like that. Maybe there's a $20 subscription fee per month. Maybe Tesla just charges a little bit more for their energy. There are a lot of options there. The common refrain would then be that, okay, Tesla can use that additional revenue, that additional margin to accelerate the build-out of the supercharger network. I don't buy into that one as much. I don't think capital is the constraint on the expansion of the network right now. I think the bigger constraints are probably around things like site selection, permitting, installation, those type of things. Tesla's got $20 billion cash on hand. They've got plenty of capital if they wanted to accelerate the network. So I think it's less about that, more about better leveraging an asset. The last element here that I want to discuss, and I think this might be the most interesting part of all of this, one of my first thoughts upon seeing this was, oh, that would be really unfortunate if you were a third-party charging system if Tesla ends up doing this. So it runs a little bit counter to the point that we said earlier that it might help the advancement of electric vehicles, because if Tesla does this, there's a lot less of a market there for third-party charging. Tesla kind of immediately steps in and, to a major extent, fills that market. It would certainly take business away, it would certainly make expanding into certain locations much less enticing for those third parties, and for anyone that is considering then building out a charging network, it becomes all that less attractive. So yes, it would diminish Tesla's competitive advantage a little bit from actually selling an electric vehicle, but it would put Tesla in the competitive space for charging networks, and it would really position them to dominate that space. If Tesla feels like their competitive advantage in actually selling the hardware, the electric vehicle itself, is big enough that losing that charging advantage won't impact their sales or won't impact their average selling price enough, if they feel that way, under those circumstances, this would seem to be the right move. And when I say losing their charging advantage there, I just mean availability of charging network. Obviously, there would still be different characteristics of charging based on the EV itself. So it'll be super interesting to see if and how this develops. And again, I think we'll come back to the economics in a future episode. Also, I guess quickly while we're on this is probably a good spot to talk about the macro news, and that is related to Biden's infrastructure plan. Reuters has reported that Biden will be unveiling a multi-trillion dollar infrastructure plan next week, March 31st, that's Wednesday, in Pittsburgh. So obviously a lot of expectations here around what sort of electric vehicle incentives may or may not be in this infrastructure plan. Maybe there are some incentives in there for charging networks that are open to all electric vehicles, and maybe that ties into Tesla's decision here to open things up. I don't think that's super likely, just an interesting consideration. And either way, this is obviously going to be very impactful for Tesla, and on the final day of the quarter, no less. So we'll have that next week, and then we'll also have deliveries probably on Friday or Saturday next week. Big week. All right, next here we've got an update on the Tesla Semi from Frito-Lay, Pepsi. As we've previously known, they've ordered at least 100 Tesla Semis, and in a press release talking about their emissions today, they mentioned that they expect 15 electric tractors to be deployed later this year. So those are implied to be Tesla Semis. Looks like Electric says that the company has confirmed that. I don't know if that was to Electric or elsewhere, but it looks like that is Pepsi's expectation, and I'm assuming they have had conversations with Tesla to set that expectation. Makes sense. In Tesla's Q4 earnings report, they said customer deliveries should start later this year, and PepsiCo, being one of the biggest orders, would likely be on that list, but nevertheless, good to pass along. All right, next up here, we are again diving into Edmunds electric vehicle range tests. We had previously discussed this in an episode a few weeks back. Edmunds had raised a lot of attention around every single Tesla they had tested not meeting its EPA range estimate. We went through some of the reasons why that may have been. Tesla apparently also gave Edmunds a call, explaining that a range indicator of zero didn't necessarily mean the battery was fully tapped out, and that there was some buffer there. That buffer may be different for Teslas than it is for other EVs. This is exactly what I had expected because Edmunds was finding that Tesla was missing the EPA mile estimate, but hitting, or even exceeding in some cases, the efficiency estimate. So the differences in how those compared were much, much higher for Tesla than the other EVs on average that they tested, implying a bigger buffer for Tesla. So anyway, Tesla complained. Edmunds decided to do a test of what that buffer actually was. They took three Teslas out, a 2021 Long Range Model 3, a 2020 Standard Range Plus, and then a 2020 Model Y Performance out to a closed 7.5-mile oval track. They also took a VW ID.4 and a Ford Mustang Mach-E. They drove all these on the track at 65 miles per hour, changing drivers every hour, and keeping at least 30 seconds of distance so as to not reduce the aerodynamic drag for one vehicle and not another. And then they kept driving until the vehicle literally would not drive anymore. So for each of these vehicles, they show the results here of how many miles they were able to get after the indicated range hit zero, and they divide that extra range into two sections, one where they're able to actually maintain that 65 mile per hour speed, and then another section of when they were not able to maintain that, and it worked its way slowly down to zero. So after hitting zero indicated range, the Mustang Mach-E had the least amount of remaining range, got 5.8 miles at 65 miles per hour, and another 1.5 miles after that before coming to a complete stop. So 7.3 miles in total. Next was the Model Y. That got about 10 miles at 65 miles per hour and a couple more before coming to a halt. The ID.4 was next at 9.4 miles at 65 miles per hour, 13 miles in total. Model 3 Standard Range Plus, 12.6 miles at 65 miles per hour, another 5 before coming to a halt, so 17.6 miles in total. And then finally, the Long Range Model 3. This one had a ton of extra buffer, 22 extra miles at 65 miles per hour, and then 3.9 after that, 25.9 in total, before coming to a halt. So all these EVs having a decent amount of buffer, and Tesla on average having more. So standalone, I like this test. I think that is valuable information to have. But from there, we start to run into some more issues. Let's start with what Edmunds says are their key takeaways. They say, quote, some Teslas, 2021 Tesla Model 3 Long Range, 2020 Tesla Model S Performance, do meet their EPA range estimates on the Edmunds EV range loop, end quote. But they note that that includes the caveats that they're charged to 100% battery capacity. Tesla doesn't recommend that. They are driven conservatively without too many ancillary power draws, such as, quote, strong climate settings, end quote. They're driven in temperate climate, and they're driven beyond the point where indicated range drops to zero. This is a terrible summary of the events because if we go back and we look at those track conditions, they say that the temperature was 54 degrees on average. And they also note that, quote, each driver set the automatic climate control to 72 degrees, end quote. So 54 degrees isn't blisteringly cold, but it's not an optimal temperature for electric vehicle range, certainly. It's still pretty cold. I mean, they put a video out on this and the testing guy has like three layers on. So the impact is definitely significant. Geotab has done a study on this with over 4,000 electric vehicles, comparing range across temperature. If we look at 53 degrees, we can see that that's about 15% less range than electric vehicles are getting at 72 degrees. That's about 12 degrees Celsius to 22 Celsius for those folks. But 15%, that's a big difference. Then you're combining that with 65 mile per hour steady state driving, and suddenly your test is nothing at all like the EPA test, which is fine, but then stop using these tests as an argument that Tesla's not meeting their EPA range estimate. If anything, it's really impressive that two out of the three that they tested here actually exceeded their EPA estimate, even under those conditions. Also, if they're making conclusions based on the total range that they got here, why are they not sharing that information? The only stat they publish is that buffer. They don't share how many actual miles they got out of each of these vehicles. My guess is that's because it doesn't really fit well with the other data that they have reported in their actual EV range data table. This is where we find numerous other problems. In this article, Edmunds writes, quote, with our new fresh findings on battery buffers, we figured we needed to give the Teslas another run on our official Edmunds EV range loop. This was our control test to validate what we discovered at the test track. We drove our standardized test route with the Tesla-owned Model 3 Long Range and the Edmunds-owned Model Y Performance, charged their batteries to 100%, and spent the entire day running them down to the end of their battery life. The average ambient temperature between our test day at the proving ground and the day on our EV range loop differed by just 1 degree, end quote. Okay, so if we flip over to their EV range table, it shows that they tested the Model 3 at 53 degrees. So keep that in mind. They then continue on to say, quote, our Model Y went the exact same distance of 263 miles, measuring at our usual cutoff, as it did during its previous test in December of 2020. This was a satisfying confirmation of the validity of our real-world EV test methodology, end quote. So in their EV range table, now they've added the Model 3 2021 long-range all-wheel drive. They show that it was tested at 53 degrees, But for the Model Y performance, they kept that 263-mile range, didn't update the temperature, they still have the 65-degree temperature from their last test. Again, that's a significant difference in temperature that probably had about a 10% impact, but Edmund's takeaway is, oh, because we got the same range, that test must have been valid. So I've put all of Edmund's data here into a more readable table. They have not updated the temperature on the Model Y, that's misleading, and they have also, because they got that result, not changed any of their estimated ranges on any of the other Tesla vehicles they tested despite knowing now about that buffer. So we again see, aside from the Model 3, which was actually tested more correctly, though at a much lower temperature, we're still seeing that much larger discrepancy between actual miles tested and efficiency tested for Tesla vehicles than all of the other vehicles. Tesla at about 11%, excluding the long-range Model 3, which was tested more correctly. Everyone else, the average there is about 1%. Furthermore, the average test temperature here for Tesla is 61 degrees, everyone else, 66 degrees. So then, of course, if you scroll up to the top of this article, they say, quote, "Every Tesla we've tested has failed to hit its EPA range estimate," end quote. This is published today. That's a statement from today. If we go back to their other article, they say, quote, "Only two of the six Teslas we tested would hit their EPA figures in our real-world conditions," end quote. So they readily admit that they would hit them in this other article, but on their actual EV range breakdown, they say that they all miss them. So this remains frustrating. The frustrating part isn't about Tesla meeting or not meeting the EPA estimate, or whether test conditions are similar or dissimilar to the EPA tests. The issue is being incredibly inconsistent with the test parameters and then trying to compare them without informing people about how big of an impact those things have. Anyway, Edmunds has agreed to speak with me, so credit for that. Hopefully that'll be out tomorrow, and we can get their point of view on some of these challenges. All right, moving on here, just a handful of other topics. First is an interesting one from teslameg.de. They go through some background history on NIO, shared by their founder and CEO, and he actually talks about a story about how Tesla purchasing some of their equipment when NIO didn't raise as much money as expected through their IPO process, and how that had a pretty significant impact on NIO's viability. It looks like the CEO here, this is translated so tough to know for sure, said that it saved the company. So either Tesla got a good deal on that, or it shows that Tesla is, you know, trying to help out other electric vehicle manufacturers as well. Or most likely, probably both. Two quick things, and then I'll get to the thing that I teased at the beginning. These are both related to yesterday's episode. The first, I had seen some people in the comments and on Twitter mentioned that adding Bitcoin as a payment option was genius by Tesla because people that had made a lot of money in Bitcoin could then pay with that Bitcoin and avoid capital gains tax on the sale of the Bitcoin to convert to fiat to actually buy the Tesla. Sounds great, right? Sounds like one of those things that's maybe a little bit too good to be true, which turns out to be the case. The IRS does require that you report capital gains on that transaction. Maybe that would end up being different in other countries, who knows, but I would be surprised. Next, a quick correction on the Porsche Taycan update. Yesterday I said it was over the air, not sure why. I knew that it wasn't. I think I'm used to just saying over the air for Tesla, but you actually were required for this Porsche battery charging update to bring it into a dealership, so I just wanted to clarify on that. And then lastly, just a bit of a teaser reward for those of you that did make it to the end of this longer episode. I just wanted to call attention to a post that was made on the Tesla Motors Club forums by user StarFoxIsDown. He says, quote, "So I'll be very curious to see if something comes out slash leaks about a company-wide call and a meeting that took place today," which was yesterday. Quote, "I have a source that works at Tesla who says that it happened and was on the call, with Elon on the call, of course, and their reaction was, quote, 'The next 3 years are going to be wildly amazing,' end quote. I'm not pressing them on any details, nor would I ever want to get them in trouble, so I'm left to speculate on my own about what was in that company-wide call. The call was apparently at 6 to 7 p.m. today, Pacific time zone," end quote, again yesterday. Second post on this with some good reminders, quote, "Please everyone keep expectations in check. I have absolutely no reason to believe this company call didn't happen, especially since this source was right about the refreshed S and X. But since I'm not asking details from them, it could be a situation where they're excited for things that may not make the stock move in such a drastic way. However, they seem very, very excited. I did throw out a number of ideas of what all could have been discussed on the call, with no expectation of them confirming or denying, like semi-deliveries, 4680 battery progress ahead of schedule, big delivery numbers for 2021, etc. And their response was, think bigger slash crazier. So take that how you want, shrugging emoji," end quote. So I'm always a little bit hesitant to share stuff like that is very much in the rumor mill category, but I did think it was interesting, especially in the context of the supercharger stuff that also appeared to be leaking out around the same time. So maybe adding a little bit of extra validity or credibility that a call like this may have happened yesterday. Haven't seen much else on that though yet. Certainly leaves us with a fun opportunity to speculate on what this might mean though, which I'd love to see from people in the comments today. Oh, and I guess lastly, just a quick SpaceX update. So it looks like SpaceX, at this point in time at least, may be intending to do the test flight for Starship SN11 tomorrow. We may see both a static fire test and a test flight, so don't forget to keep an eye out for that. But as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and I'll see you tomorrow for the Friday, March 26th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.